the favorites to make the Stanley Cup final this year. These Canadians, Ronald Torrey, got Serge Savard. He hired Jacques Demers. And all together, they worked a young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadians win the Stanley Cup.
Barkov, slap pass, Plekanec shoots, scores!
Le tir est levé! Daniel Brière!
To the boards, one last chance. P.K. Subban passes off, and he scores!
Tipped in front by guess who? Thomas Fennec has the hat trick.
It went to Perso. Oh, get out of Price! Should have tilled to Perso.
Ready in the second. Here's Barkov scores. Barkov wins the game. And the roof comes down at the Bell Center. What a hockey game tonight.
Welcome to the 2-4. The first post-2013-2014 Habs season edition of the 2-4. Zach Vinas, Sean O'Neill, how we feeling now that we're done, Sean?
You know what? Not too bad.
I would agree with that.
It, you know, it sucks seeing your team bow out of the playoffs, obviously, but all things considered, it was a pretty good season, and as we said before, it doesn't feel like a fluke, so I think the Habs will be back to this point sooner rather than later, so you know, all things considered, I'm pretty happy with the way things unfolded, so I'm not too beat up about it.
I get the sense, strangely enough, that this podcast is going to be a lot more positive in nature than last week's was when we were still alive.
Yeah, I'd say so.
What a strange creatures we are. So obviously, if you're listening, you're very aware the Montreal Canadiens, now eliminated from the 2013-2014 NHL playoffs. New York Rangers going on to play for the Stanley Cup, and they'll be playing either the Kings or the Blackhawks, as the Blackhawks did exactly as I expected them to, and are still alive in their series.
Man, you may have expected that. I didn't. Nothing against the Blackhawks. They're a great team, but I just, you know, L.A. looked like they were just poised to put an end to that. And then, the Blackhawks are good. They did what, I guess, you know, like you said, it shouldn't be a shock, but I thought the Kings looked so good through games 2 through 4 that I kind of thought this one was over.
Kings must be the streakiest team to never be eliminated in playoff history, right?
Yeah.
I mean, down 3-0, up, then they lose a bunch, win a bunch, lose a bunch. Streaks all over the place. It's an interesting ride if you're a Kings fan. No, even when the Hawks went down 3-1, I said, this team is not done yet. They're at least forcing a game 7. The Kings still win this series. I don't think
it's
going
to be really tough to go into Chicago and win, though.
It really is. Great teams, though. My God, that's a great series to watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's get into the 12-pack here. Off the top, why'd the Montreal Canadiens lose to the New York Rangers?
Well, I mean, the most obvious answer is, as we mentioned last week, we're missing our best player. And Tokarski wasn't bad. Tokarski was even good, I would say, even, you know, B-. But when you lose your best player, when you lose Carey Price, that's going to hurt. Besides that, just Vigneault has that team playing its system to a T.
Oh, yeah. That was obvious in Game 6.
I mean, they are playing really, really, really good hockey right now. And they're doing that Rangers thing. They can roll up their lines, and, you know, they're decent offensively, but they strangle you to death on defense. And yeah, it's not the most exciting brand of hockey in the world, but it's working. And listen, this is, you know, maybe we would have beat them with Carey in there. Maybe we wouldn't have. This is a good team. This is a team that came back from 3-1 down to beat Pittsburgh. You know, this is a team that possession-wise is one, I think, sixth in the league all season long in either Corsi close or Fenwick close, one of the two. This is, you know, this is probably a better team than we gave them credit for heading into the playoffs. Before the playoffs started, you know, Boston, Pittsburgh, those are sort of the teams everyone knew about in the East, and everyone kind of said if one of those two teams stumbles, maybe Montreal or maybe New York can rise up, and it ended up being New York that did it, and they're playing really, really good hockey right now, and they have been for about 2 months now.
Yeah,
if not longer.
Exactly. To further go with what you were saying, I would say the Canadiens didn't win this series because they didn't have Carey Price, but I'm not about to say they lost this series because Tokarski was in nets, if you know what I mean. I think with Carey Price, you know, obviously they would have had a much better chance of beating the New York Rangers. Like, you, hard to say. It would have been seven games for sure, Price and Lundqvist. Would have been interesting to see where that... And I do believe the Canadiens with Price would have beat them. But they didn't lose because of Tokarski. They did not lose because of Tokarski. Tokarski played acceptable to... that's even undercutting him. He was great. He really played great. But there's a big difference between Price and Tokarski. Not just in the saves they make, not just in the save percentage at the end of the day, but the changing momentum in the game, their ability to manage the game, get those pucks stopped at the right time. I'm thinking to the overtime loss in New York when Montreal just failed to get it out over and over. That's the kind of thing that maybe Carey Price puts a clamp down at some point, gets the face off, lets you readjust. I mean, there's all those little moments that Carey Price, he's as much a game manager as he is a goalie for this team. And so, yes, they didn't win because they didn't have Carey Price. But I'm not going to hang the loss on Tokarski. I think everyone would agree that would be wholly unfair. I'm going to hang it on the loss on the fact that the Rangers played well. They played in Game 6, they played the perfect hockey game. After playing a more than confused Game 5, they came back and really showed they were going to stamp out the fire. And the same way the Montreal Canadiens kind of weren't getting the respect I think they deserved after easily handling Tampa Bay Lightning without their starting goalie, I don't think the Rangers are quite getting the respect they maybe deserve. Just because you beat a team that was down its most important player doesn't mean the win's worth anything less. Who knows what happened with Price and Nets, but the Rangers are a good team. I don't know what they're going to fare in the West, and we'll talk about that later, against the West, rather. We'll talk about that later, but they're a good team, and they beat the Montreal Canadiens without Carey Price.
Yeah, I mean, two Eastern Conference final appearances in 3 years. Like I said, top 10 team possession-wise. They didn't get off to a great start this year, but since... you know, Christmas at the latest, this has been a good hockey team, and they probably shouldn't have snuck up on folks the way they did.
That's true, and then you add Marty St. Louis.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he made them a much better team. That was a big move. Nice place to get yourself dealt there, Marty St. Louis. If they feel more like the team...
didn't give him any choices.
Yeah, exactly. They feel more like the team of destiny, which I guess actually takes... I'll just jump right into number two. Can the Rangers win the Cup?
I mean, they can... but just like it was going to be very tough sledding for Montreal, yeah. It's going to, as much as I just sang their praises, it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
It's going to be really, really tough. Now they have maybe the best goalie in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's possible that he steals that series for them. And it's not just Henrik. I mean, it's a team that's pretty deep on offense. They've got a nice blue line core. Like, they could get it done, but God, Chicago and LA are both so, so good.
Yeah.
And, you know, you say maybe they're going to be, you know, exhausted having gone through a seven-game series, and there's a chance that's true, but when you're so close to the finish line, I think you can hold that off for another 2 weeks, especially teams like this that have been there before. I know they've both played a lot of games over the last couple of years, but these teams know how to win. You know, as much as we kind of dismiss that as a thing, I think there's something to be said about the fact that, you know, they're back there. You know, Chicago's going to have a chance to claim a third cup in 6 years. LA is going for 2 and 3. Like, I can't, you know, it's possible they just get outplayed. It's possible New York beats them, but I can't see either LA or Chicago getting so close to the cup and letting it slip through their fingers.
Like I was just saying, the Rangers have a team of destiny feel just because there's so many great storylines there and a little bit of what they feel like they've been riding on their own magic, much the way the Canadiens were until Price went down. Everything was kind of breaking their way very nicely. But destiny is going to meet a much better team at this point. And we're going to see how that plays out. Because, look, the Rangers, as I just got through, also, you know, saying all these good things about maybe we don't realize how good of a team they were. They haven't played a team like Chicago or LA yet. The Pittsburgh Penguins are not either of these teams. The Montreal Canadiens, as we see, obviously, was without Carey Price, definitely not. But even with Carey Price, it was going to be a massive hill for the Habs to try and climb if they wanted a chance at the Cup with Price at his best. And it's going to be the same for the New York Rangers. These are teams, when you watch the West, these are teams that seem to be playing an altogether different kind of hockey than we saw in the Eastern Conference Final. The kind of mistakes the New York Rangers were able to get away with against the Canadiens, They're probably not going to get away with against either the Hawks or the Kings. These are teams that know how to kill, and they're fighting each other right now, knowing that they got a pretty good chance at the Stanley Cup, whoever comes out of this series. This Game 7 coming up between Kings and Hawks might just be the best game of the playoffs.
It's going to be fantastic. I can't wait for it.
My God, I'm so excited for that game.
Number 3, do you still want to trade Rene Bork?
More than ever.
Yeah.
Because now his value is quite high. You're going to get... Now, I don't know where it is. I have no idea, and I think it's probably the value of Rene Bork varies from GM to GM, and how much impetus they put on one's ability to show up in the playoffs. The man had only one less goal in these playoffs than he did the entire regular season. Completely different creature. Now, I understand the argument, hey, we need guys, as Mark Bergevin said last year, we need guys who help us win through the regular season. Rene Bork's not on that list. And we need guys who help us win in the playoffs. And Rene Bork was certainly on that list this postseason. I don't think he's a Danny Briere. I don't think he's one of these enigmatic, only show up in the playoff types that are worth keeping around. His value is very high right now. He takes more money out of your cap space than he definitely should. Move him right now. I think the return would be much higher than at any other. And the fact that you can get a return is probably higher than at any other point that we've seen previous. I would move Bork now because there's going to be buyers and you might get something interesting back.
I don't know how much you'll get back, but I think you still ship him a month's worth.
Yeah, but anything is interesting.
Sure, yeah. But a month's worth of good play doesn't negate 2+ seasons of kind of being a non-factor.
The Toronto Maple Leafs would disagree.
It'll be interesting to see if there's anyone out there who's willing to take a flyer on him. I remember when Penner went on his big run, or runs, I should say, with the Kings, and we all kind of wondered if a mini bidding war would erupt for Dustin Penner, and it never really happened. I think, again, with the exception of the Maple Leafs, I think GMs are getting a little bit smarter about not being blinded by the fool's gold that can sometimes be a hot run in the playoffs. But, I mean, Bork is, he's still an NHL caliber player, yes. I guess, if nothing else. And if there's a team out there with a bit of room and they're willing to spend a bit of money to bring in a top nine guy, if you can get a fifth round pick for it, I'm doing it.
Could anyone else have scored a hat trick in an elimination game in the Eastern Conference Final and have us talking about, well, that's enough of this guy?
Douglas Murray?
Well, I'd probably be boarding up my windows right now and preparing for the apocalypse. We wouldn't even be doing this podcast if Douglas Murray had scored a hat trick in that game.
That's the thing about Bork. Even when he was playing as horribly as he was playing, if you told me, Bork's going to have a hat trick in the playoffs, I'd say, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, exactly. He's a less valuable Andre Kostitsyn.
Yeah.
Maybe more well-liked by his teammates, but that's just guessing. I don't even know if that's actually true. It just feels like it's true. Yeah, I would move him.
Maybe there's a team out there who's, really desperate for scoring and, in Nashville or a Florida or someone out there that can... It always seems like Florida's our go-to pick for if we want to dump a kind of a quasi-crappy contract on someone. We assume the Panthers will take it, but there might, the Islanders maybe. There might be a team
St.
out there
Louis
that's,
Blues.
That's willing to talk themselves into Rene Bork.
Maybe the Blues.
I don't know about that, man.
They just want some scoring in the playoffs. I'm trying to talk the St. Louis Blues into it, is what I'm trying to do. is that your first move? Because question 4, what's your first move, is Mark Bergevin?
My first move is a 10-year, $100 million contract for PK Subban.
It's not allowed, but a very nice offer. We'll accept the highest bid possible. Thank you. Moving on? No, not really. Well, let's talk about this.
Your priority has to be to lock up your best player.
Yeah, for sure. He's going to get whatever he wants at this point.
Well, if he doesn't get it from Montreal, someone's going to offer sheet him. And Montreal's not letting him go away.
No way.
Even if there's 4 first-round picks coming the other way, they're not letting him go away.
No, he's not going anywhere.
At this point, you can't do it.
It'll be...
And listen, Bergevin backed himself into a corner.
Yeah, he did.
You can't let him go. There's no way you can let him go.
No, it'd be the suicide of your future. And these guys know that. The brain trust in Montreal is very aware that if they have any illusions of winning the Stanley Cup, and they got close this year, they're going to need to keep PK Subban. They're very aware of that. They know that what they're building right now is completely built on the foundation of two players, Price and Subban, and you've got to make sure they're both there. I'm not worried about, I'm looking forward to the day, and I hope it's any day now, that the announcement comes out, whatever max deal that it turns out to be for PK Subban. I'm just waiting for that. We'll move on past that. It's going to be huge, and it's going to be worth full value, not just next year, but as the cap rises higher and higher, the small percentage, I mean, it's going to still be a much bigger percentage than it would have been had you locked them up 2 years ago, but I still think you get them on the long term now, there's still going to be plenty of value in that contract. I don't expect at any point, no matter what amount we sign Subban for, that the Canadians will end up regretting it.
No, I can't see that happening either. And yeah, like you said, that's the blueprint for the future. That's the future of the franchise. You're going to have one of the top five goalies in the world locked up for years. You're going to have one of the top five defensemen in the world locked up for X number of years. And then, you know, to a slightly lesser extent, you got Pacioretty and Gallagher and some of the other guys.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, there was a while there I was worried. I think there's basically 0% chance now that he leaves.
Yeah, definitely not. I mean, you'd have to be a horrible GM to let him get away right now. Just the absolute worst, and I don't think at any point has Bergevin given us reason to believe he's an absolutely horrible general manager.
No.
And it certainly seemed through the playoffs that there was a solid and happy relationship between Subban and his general manager, so I'm not worried about that. There's 0% chance that PK Subban is going anywhere. And I think a pretty decent chance that PK Subban may raise the Stanley Cup at some point with the Montreal Canadiens. And I think he knows that, and that probably helps through negotiations as well.
Sure. Yeah, I will. It's probably, you know, it'd be better if they got it done before someone swooped in with an offer sheet.
Yes.
Because if you can get him, I don't think you're going to get him on a deal, but, you know, you don't have to pay an extra premium for him.
That's very true.
Whereas, you know, Philly swoops in and offers him the absolute most.
But what?
I mean, I think he's getting the max from Montreal anyways, but you don't want to be put into an awkward situation where you're paying slightly more than you would have had to otherwise.
Yeah, that's very true. I think, I mean, my hope here, and I imagine, because there's no reason for this not to be the case, is, you know, season's over, we'll say go home, take a few days, rest yourself, get your head kind of free of the playoffs. We'll sit back down pretty soon, and I expect, with no inside information, I'm just saying, my guess is before too long, we'll see that contract signed now.
I think everything's pointing towards that.
And I think, why wouldn't Bergevin want that done sooner rather than later? Because then he knows which pieces have to move elsewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
at that point,
yeah, exactly.
He's...
And you know what percentage of your cap room you have to play with come July 5th.
Yeah, exactly. He knows...
And come the draft.
Yeah. I think it's got to be... He probably has it all done before free agent and draft and all that. So we can look forward to that. That's going to be a fun day.
Yeah, absolutely.
The coronation of the Subban. Where are we at here?
We are at number...
Good time wasting.
We are at number 4. What is your first move if you're Marc Bergevin?
Well, that's where we're at. We just talked about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Are you not listening to this podcast?
I'm listening. I just have to scroll through the questions.
You don't even listen to this podcast.
We are at number 5. Yeah. Best Hab in the series.
Best Hab in the series, series being the one against the Rangers. For my money, I think quite possibly Alex Galchenyuk was the best Hab. Bork had a great performance in there. He was good. But I think Alex Galchenyuk might have been the best Hab in that whole series.
He was great. If this playoffs was really the coming out party for PK Subban, which seems weird to say about someone who won the Norris Trophy last year, but if it is, like, next year or the year after could be the coming out party for Galchenyuk.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell that he's continuously inching ever closer to being that breakout
guy. He was half an inch close to... being a full-on hero with a game winner and then an overtime game winner in this series, if that one had just managed to sneak by Lundqvist in game 4. I mean, that was so close.
I still have no idea how that didn't go in.
I don't think anyone does. Physics doesn't even know how that doesn't go in.
No kidding. Yeah, that's a good answer. I think you could mention his running mate Gallagher. I thought was pretty good as well. I know he got some heat, but I thought he was fine. I'll go with another guy who's been a bit of a breakout candidate in the playoffs. I thought Eller was fantastic.
That's true. Eller's very good in these playoffs.
Really good 200-foot hockey player. He might never turn into that 25-goal scorer we were hoping he would, but he's turned into a really solid all-around player.
Yeah, I really like Lars Eller, what he did in the playoffs.
Yeah, he went through a rough stretch in the regular season, and we were pretty critical of him, but he was great in the playoffs, and I think that's closer to the, you know, sort of his true talent level than the guy who sort of was a non-factor for a stretch in the season there.
Yep.
To the point where some people are wondering if, and we'll get to this later as well, but to the point where some people are wondering if Plekanec is expendable. Because Eller can kind of fill that role. I'm not there yet, but no. I thought Eller was very, very good, and I thought he was, you know, maybe sort of under the radar our best forward against the Rangers.
You know who else had a really great series against the Rangers was David Dernay.
Yeah,
he didn't mark up the point shoot all that much, but I thought against Boston and even against New York, he played really well. I was quite impressed with what he did because he had had a tendency to sort of disappear in his previous playoffs performances. Not this year. He seemed to dig really hard and play with an extra gear through the playoffs, and he looked good. All centers.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
We'll get to the fact that we're mostly discussing centers. Here's someone we didn't throw in. Was PK Subban, though, who I think we would have argued definitely was the best against Tampa Bay. You can make the argument the best against Boston, but definitely not the best against the New York Rangers. Is that concerning at all?
No. It would have been nice if we'd seen that PK show up. Maybe the team even extends it to seven or wins if it's that PK, but I mean, his track record's extensive enough, including his track record of showing up in big moments, that I'm not worried about the fact that he was relatively invisible for six games. I think that's bad timing more than anything.
Unfortunately, the best player in that series was Ryan McDonagh, which is the one thing I didn't want to say at the end of that series.
What's that?
As the one thing I really didn't want to have to say at the end of the series.
He was great. He was fantastic.
He's an amazing player. And that's all we'll talk about that for now.
Top 10 defenseman in the NHL, probably.
Oh, no doubt about that. No doubt about that. And the best defender in that series. All apologies to Subban, absolutely. But by far the best. Best player. Better than Lundqvist in that series. Question 6, who's the best have throughout the playoffs? I think we just sort of answered that.
Yeah, although let's not forget how good Carey was against Boston.
That's true.
But yeah, I mean, just the mere fact that Subban played 6 more games than Price, that even if they weren't 6 of his best games, I think you'd give the edge to PK.
I would think. I mean, there was a point when the Boston series came to an end that this had been PK Subban's playoffs. I mean, they'd really been all about Subban. No matter what series you were watching, you were not avoiding this guy. He stepped to the front of the NHL as one of its superstars in these playoffs. No argument. Best player. I would have liked to have seen more from him against the Rangers, but hopefully next year that evolution of Subban continues and he puts up a great performance right through. It did feel like, you know, what carried us against Tampa Bay and what carried us against Boston, namely Subban and Price, we were without both of them in some regard throughout this Rangers series. That makes a big difference.
Yep. And part of that, like we said, is this is a well-coached team that's pretty good at shutting down the other. I mean, you know, you look at what they did to Crosby, and we don't think of teams shutting down defensemen the way they do shutting down forwards, but I think part of it's just that this team was, you know, always on Subban, and they were bracketing him, and they were making life tough for him, and, you know, he wasn't really able to get going the way he was against Boston or Tampa. I think that a lot of that has to do with Vigneault, and a lot of it has to do with how many good two-way forwards they have, and a lot of it has to do even with McDonagh and that blue line core.
Last year, we really hung the loss on Therrien and also really gave McLean a lot of credit for the Ottawa Senators' win in round one. I don't think Therrien was necessarily beat head-to-head as a coach. I think Vigneault did a great job, but I'm not going to say coaching was the difference in this series. I don't want to fault Therrien to that degree. Vigneault was great, though. He's done a great job with this.
Yeah, Vigneault was fantastic. No, I thought Therrien was fine.
I thought he had a decent playoffs, to be honest with you.
Yeah, so did I.
Didn't have too many... I mean, the fact that he seemed to come... When all was said and done, he seemed to recognize Douglas Murray wasn't a top 6 forward.
Yep. And he seemed to recognize that PK Subban's a guy who deserving of, you know, legitimate number one defenseman minutes.
Can we say now that...
And in a sense, it's frustrating that it, you know, it's like he knew these things all along and he was just kind of too stubborn to admit them.
Is it that or
and
did
that
they...
That part's a little frustrating, but, you know, at least he wasn't so stubborn that he continued making insane decisions.
But is it that or did this team have a different plan for the regular season and the postseason?
That's possible, but if that's the case, I still don't think that's very good coaching.
Look where we got.
Sure, yeah. But I don't see why there's any reason you need to do that in the regular season.
I'm not sure why either. I'm just...
I do think there's a difference between regular season hockey and playoff hockey, but I can't for the life of me think of a logical reason why playing Douglas Murray significant minutes and putting P.K. Subban on the leash in the regular season is beneficial.
I'm with you. I agree with what you're saying. I just think that the coaching staff and the GM might disagree with you on that there was no plan in place. Some part of me wonders if this was a strategy on their part. And I like you, I don't really understand what it would be. But the way they spoke all season and the way they've sort of continued to speak through the playoffs, it seemed like this was part of some plan of theirs.
If that's the case, I mean, I guess it worked, but I still don't understand the underlying logic behind it.
Maybe just Murray's there like a relief pitcher. Eat up minutes. Keep guys fresher. Maybe they felt they didn't have enough when they got to the playoffs last year. Keep Subban's minutes down.
I think there's truth to that. I think, I mean, Bergevin has come out and said that we didn't have enough depth on defense, and that killed us. There are better guys out there who can eat up minutes than Douglas Murray, including two guys we have in the organization right now.
I would agree. Question number 7. Do you re-sign Andrei Markov?
If the term and the dollars are right, yeah.
He was awfully invisible in these playoffs.
He had his moments.
He did, but I was hoping for a little more from Markov.
Sure, fair enough. I think, you know, when everyone was sort of doing their postmortems after we lost to the Rangers and the question came out, what does this team really need? The most common answer that I saw, and I think I tend to agree with this, the most common answer was this team maybe needs a really true high-end number two defenseman.
Yeah.
You know, the implication being maybe at this point Markov is more of a really good number three.
I think he was the third or fourth best defenseman for Montreal through the playoffs.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I still re-sign Markov, but
someone's going to offer him a nice deal. So yeah, if you can talk to him,
I don't know if I get into a bidding war with him.
No.
If Philly wants to bring him in for 4 years at $20 million, I let him walk.
Oh my God, don't touch that. Yes, go. We can't. We can't spend that on Andrei Markov at this point.
No. 2 years, $10 million. 3 years, $12 million. I would do that. If it gets much beyond that, I'm walking away.
I would. I don't know. I'd do 3 years, $12 million. Four is pretty cheap, though. Four years.
That's
very
the thing.
Cheap.
I mean, 3 years. I'm worried about how the last year and a half of that contract plays out.
But what's a $4 million contract at that point? 2 years from now. What's a $4 million contract 2 years from now?
Yeah.
Probably feels about like 2.5 does right now, which, you know, you can eat. Maybe, yeah, 3 years at four, maybe, if he's willing to do that. If I was Markov, I'd take more money for less time, but players don't.
Sure,
if
he wants to come back for 1 year at, God, even 6.5, 7, I'd probably do that, but...
Yep. Yeah, use him as a bridge, one more year of a bridge there. Why can't he Timu and just sign 1 year, 1 year, 1 year until he retires now?
Yeah, I mean, maybe he will. Like you said, the term scares me a lot more than the dollar hit.
Yeah, term.
He was good. He was good this season, and yep. You know, he wasn't great in the playoffs, but it didn't look like he was falling off a ledge. He might have just gotten a little bit tired, but I do think that ledge is coming. So I wouldn't, definitely nothing more than 3 years. And if you're even going three, there needs to be a bit of a hit on the AAV.
I agree with what you said. You don't get in a bidding war for him. If Dallas or LA or somebody wants to offer him a big contract, then you walk away. You say, enjoy it, congratulations, but we're not in a place where we can be overpaying for a veteran defenseman in the twilight of his career. We're a team on the up and up. We're looking at challenging for the cup in the next couple seasons. We'd like your veteran presence here, but we're not going to overpay for you at this point. We can find other ways to do that, probably smarter, and I'd let him walk. But if you talk to him before he's a free agent, and there seems like interest from both sides, and we can agree on a price and the terms reasonable, then bring Andrei Markov back. He's not, as much as I just said, sort of against him, I don't think he's a bad defenseman. I don't think he had a bad playoffs. I just don't think he didn't step up in the playoffs very much. He had the one goal against the Rangers and was pretty quiet the rest of the way, and looked fairly ineffective on a rather ineffective power play.
I do think there is that mutual interest to bring him in, though.
There has to be.
You get the impression. I mean, this is a guy who spent his whole career here, who's re-signed several times. You get the impression.
Who became a Canadian citizen.
Yeah.
I mean, it says something. I think he'll be back, and I think he'll be back reasonably. Probably at like half a mil more than we'd like to pay.
Sure, which is fine. Yeah. I mean, he is the type of player who could start a bidding war because there's still something there. There's still a lot of value there.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
I mean, we're talking about a guy who's going to get $5 or $6 million.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think he comes back. And if he doesn't, like, there has to be a plan B because it's easy to say, oh, the cap hit's too high. We got to let him walk. But if you lose him and you don't bring in a really good defenseman, that's a big loss to the team.
And you send Rene Bork and Dustin Tokarski to Toronto for Dion Phaneuf.
Speaking of off-season moves, number 8, do you still want Vanek back?
I feel like I'm in the minority here, but most certainly, I would welcome Thomas Vanek back on a 6-year, 7-year deal, paying him mucho dinero. Definitely, bring Thomas Vanek is a hero in Game 6 if Henrik Lundqvist doesn't pull off a ridiculous save. And now, and I know people weren't necessarily happy with his performance against the Rangers, and, you know, left a little to be desired. I won't disagree there. But much in the same way I said this playoffs does not turn me around on Rene Bork, likewise for Thomas Vanek, and I thought he had a pretty decent playoffs. I thought he looked pretty engaged more often than not, despite the fact that I seem to be in the minority there. Yes, if Thomas Vanek is willing to come back, you bring him back.
Yeah, do I want one of the 10 best goal scorers on the planet on my team? Yeah, I think I do.
I don't know. He's enigmatic.
He is insanely enigmatic, although if he was from Moose Jaw, we'd all just be talking about how the fact that he's probably hurt. But anyways.
Very true.
Yeah, absolutely bring him back. I don't know if he has any desire to come back. You know, he's probably headed to Minnesota, but if there's any chance you can bring him back, absolutely you do that. If you can add Thomas Vanek to your core, to the Pacioretty Subban Price core for the next 7 years, you absolutely do that.
Of course you do that.
Again, this is a guy who has the 4th most goals in the NHL since 2006. After, I believe it's Iginla, Ovechkin, and somebody else, maybe Crosby.
Is Iginla going back to Boston? Otherwise, I'd like to sign him.
I would love that. It seems like Boston's the fit.
Yeah. I want to also sign him so he continues to sign with the team that eliminated from the playoffs. Just year in, year out. Till he re-signs over and over again, till he retires in Montreal with a couple Stanley Cups. He'd be a nice, I mean, if Vanek gets away and Iginla can be out there, I think at least, as we said on the last podcast, suddenly the Canadians are interesting to these guys who might be in the twilights and thinking about a chance at a cup.
Yep, and I said we need a backup plan if Markov goes. That's equally true that we need a backup plan if Vanek leaves.
Oh, yeah, you need to replace that somehow.
Because, you know, besides being one of the best forwards on the planet, the other thing Vanek did when he came over was just add a level of depth to this team that we hadn't had in a long time.
He completed the team. He made it a full team.
Yep, there were three legitimate scoring lines, almost four legitimate, four lines that could put the puck in the net. When you have Danny Briere playing on your fourth line, that's pretty impressive. When Vanek leaves, you have to start reshuffling again. And, you know, Bork's back up and playing top 9 minutes, and you're probably not going to get the Bork that you had in the playoffs in the regular season. So if Vanek's gone, you got to take a hard look at, you know, either Gabrick, Molson, Camilleri, or a trade, or, you know, a bio guy like Mike Brad Richards. You got to start doing something.
You do. Something has to be done, because you can't have everybody playing up a notch again. That's where you're a middling team. Vanek made them no longer a middling team. He made them a top-level team. And you will have to replace that if he doesn't come back. And that's going to be one of the big off-season decisions and moves that Bergevin is going to have to make if he wants to keep this team competing at the level that they rose to in these playoffs. You mentioned Briere playing on the fourth line. I think at this point we can say we'll give him the Dumb and Dumber Award for totally redeemed himself, man.
Unless you want to give it to Darren A.
I think Dale pulled that off in the regular season, though.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'm saying over the course of the year, I got no complaints about Daniel Briere, and if you've listened to this podcast and you want to play back the tape, I had plenty of complaints. I thought he was worth it in the end.
Yep, as did I.
Could have been maybe used a little more, to be honest. I mean, if I had one complaint against Terrien, I think I would have liked to have seen Daniel Briere getting a few more minutes out there.
Yeah, I agree.
He seemed to
Which
do
is
something
weird. He seems
it.
Like such a Tyranny player. I mean, he's old as hell, and he's experienced, and he's got character, and blah, blah, blah. Like, I never really understood why Tyranny wasn't giving Breer the minutes, because he seems like he was built in a lab to play for Michel Tyranny.
And I understand, maybe regular season you keep Breer's minutes limited for the things that we were talking about earlier about just fatigue factor, and he's obviously an older player, so maybe you keep him on the third, fourth line through the regular season and keep his minutes down, but he proved he, once again, is the playoff commodity he seems to be, even at this advanced age. Probably could do it again next year. I'm no longer sick of Danny Breer being a Hab. I think the Breer Hab experience is going to go fairly decently in the twilight of his career.
Yeah, I mean, we're halfway through, and I would call the first season a relative success.
Would agree. Other guys who aren't coming back, Murray's not coming back, obviously. I would hope, right?
I would think that's over with.
Frankie Bouillon, is he going to retire?
I think so. Some people seem to think that he's still got some hockey left in him, but I think this is it for him.
There's plenty of the guys coming up, obviously, can replace them. So, and it'll be. I don't think we'll see a lot of moves in the offseason, but we could see some big ones will have to happen in a way. Either you got to re-sign Vanek and you bring in Markov, or there has to be Plan B for those guys. You're not going to see a reshuffling. I mean, it's going to be most of the same guys next year, but there might be a few important faces in or out of this as we move through the summer of 2014.
And there's one other guy, too, but we'll get to him in a second.
Yeah. Question 9. Montreal's starting to have a bit of backlog at center. Dernais, Eller, Galchenyuk, Plekanec. So what would you do about it? It's tough.
It is tough. Because part of me wants to go back to the argument that, you know, our depth is our strength, and I'm fine with even playing one of those guys out of position for one more year. That being said, I feel like we're at the point with Eller and Galchenyuk where you kind of want to start slotting them in at their actual position.
Yep.
Especially Galchenyuk, who's been fine on the wing, but
it's time.
The guy is a center. You can tell he's a center.
And he's better at center.
Yeah, and if you want him to be your first-line center of the future, you know, within 2-3 years, which is the plan, he's going to start playing more minutes at center at some point.
And next season has to be. You have to get him into center next season.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I don't know which of those guys you move. I mean, like we said, this is why there's some whispers that maybe Plecky's on the move, but he's such a good player.
He does so much right.
And Eller's getting close to that level defensively, but he doesn't chip in as much offensively, and he's not the player Plecky is.
No.
I mean, I understand the logic on and why you would trade Tomáš Plekanec, but man, you better be getting back full value in return.
And I don't know that you can get back full value for him.
Like, I think you can, but
who would send you some? What do you see, I guess, as full value?
The most common theory, and I forget who's throwing this out there on Twitter. There are a few of them, and I'm sorry if I'm not, you know, sort of giving them credit. But if you can get a legitimate top end second defenseman for Plecky, a guy like Kevin Shattenkirk from St. Louis or Brent Seabrook from Chicago or Dan Hamius from Vancouver, then I think I'd probably pull the trigger. Or Dustin Byfuglien from Winnipeg to make you a happy man.
Do it.
But, you know, if you're doing it for anything less than that, Plecky's such a good player.
Yeah, okay, one of those guys, then maybe. And I think you have to do it at this point. What about Dale, man?
He's the worst player of the bunch.
Yes, exactly.
And the most overpaid player of the bunch.
Yes.
He's done a good job of, I mean, he was horrendous the first part of the season. He's done a good job of resurrecting his career and going back to being that, you know, 75 point a season type guy. What do you get for David Desharnais? Or does it not matter?
That's what I have to, because I really, look, those other three guys are so good in their own way. No, not to say, I don't think Eller's better than Desharnais right now necessarily, but he's a lot cheaper and he plays a different type of hockey. But Dalnay's young. It's not like Dalnay's, you know, 30 now, and we're kind of looking at moving on at this point. He's still a young player, too. But I think the reason neither of us set him off the top is there's a bit of the emotional connection to him somehow. The fact that he's worked so hard. Really, if you're just I think if you're outside of Montreal and you're looking at the Canadians and you say, look, you've got this logjam at center, one of these guys got to go, you probably move David Day on there.
Yeah, 3 more years at 3.5 per on the contract. Not a horrible contract if he keeps playing the way he has, from Christmas onwards.
He can.
And if you can get a number 3, number 4 defenseman for him, maybe a first round pick.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough. That's the thing. I have a better idea of what the value of, you know, Eller and Plekanec is. I mean, obviously Galchenyuk isn't getting moved, but I have a better idea what the value of those two guys is, what you'd be getting in return, than David Desharnais, because he's a mystery. You know, even within Montreal, he's a bit of a lightning rod. He's seen as a mystery, and I don't know what the perception of him is as a player is in the other 29 markets.
Well, it's like you say, I think he's a mystery even to us. There's not a, I think people still don't quite understand what David Desharnais is as a player. Everyone else is very definable, and because he's had a bit of an up-and-down career, because his lows have been low and his highs have been very high, because there's some perception that a lot of what he does is thanks to always playing next to Pacioretty, and because he's so tiny and was never drafted, there's so much that goes into Desharnais, I think there's still confusion about who he is. And I think he's a pretty good player. I think he's who we saw through the second half of the season. I do believe that he found himself, and that is who he is, but I don't know what you get for that value. He's what? He's a decent second line center for most teams.
Yeah, he's a decent top six. I mean, he has to play center. So he's a pretty good second line center who will rack up the points, and if you put him with the right players, he can do some stuff. He's a pretty good point guard.
He has his
limitations, you know, sort of in isolation from not playing with good players. I mean, if you trade him to, you know, if you trade him to Buffalo or Calgary, or if you trade him to a team where there's not much to put him with, he's going to be a disaster, because he doesn't create a whole lot of offense on his own.
No, he doesn't. He's definitely the toughest.
But the flip side of that is if you put him on Ryan Kessler's line and move Kessler to the wing, like, Kessler might score 40 goals next season.
It could happen. Tough. I don't know. I guess you're willing to shop all three and you see who has the highest value almost.
Yeah, that's not a bad way to do it.
To see, you know, make them all sort of available and find out which is the right trade for you to make is probably the best way to do it. Because I think it's close to time. You could probably get away with one more season with these four, but you've got to start getting Galchenyuk in at center more often.
If you bring them all back, then you move Eller to the wing.
Yeah, that's fair.
Galchenyuk has to get those center minutes.
Eller becomes pretty invisible on the wing, though.
Yeah.
Because he's a natural center. They're all natural centers. I mean, none of them can play anywhere else.
I mean, Plekis maybe the most suited to shift over to the wing, even though he's played center his whole career.
Yeah, he could probably adapt.
Yeah. Like you said, Eller, Galchenyuk, and especially Desharnais, you can't really play him anywhere else. I mean, Galchenyuk, you can. You don't want to anymore.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And in at number 10, one forward we haven't mentioned yet, and a big part of the decision-making in the offseason, is the captain going to come back?
Is he, or do I want him to?
Answer both.
Actually, I want him to, because I think, obviously he's not coming back at the same cap hit.
Well, no.
So, I mean, if you just assume that off the top of your head, if he's coming back at 2.5 or 3, I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. I'm more than okay with that. I want to see that happen. That being said, I could see another team talking into paying a bit too much money for him, in which, again, kind of like Markov, if the price is right, you bring him back. Otherwise, bringing in a player sort of on the downside of his career for a team that's ascending might not be the smart move.
No, I mean, if he sees, if he enjoys his role as the captain of the most storied franchise in NHL history, perhaps on the cusp of entering into an era when it's going to contend for a Stanley Cup, and you want to be a part of that and are willing to, not even necessarily take a hit, but take market value, actual current market value, and stick around, then bring Brian Gionta back. Because he rolled nicely into the next phase of his career in the latter half of last season as a defensive forward who can still score once in a while. He's still good on the shootout, which we're probably still going to need him for. We forget about that in the regular season, still an element. Now, it's obviously not enough reason to keep a guy, but he's also your captain, and he's won a Stanley Cup, and he's got some dig in him. And I think he knows who he is now. now that he's no longer the elite goal scorer and a top six guy. And if he wants to be part of this and wants to be the captain of this, I say bring him back. I really enjoy Brian Gionta. I'd like to bring him back. But, you know, if somebody wants to pay him a little more, or he feels like going back to New Jersey to play with his brother to finish his career, then, you know, I also won't shed too many tears watching Gionta ride into the sunset.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'll look back fondly on the Gionta era. And if there's one or two more years tacked onto that at the end at 2.5 or 3 million per season and he chips in 18 goals a year, that's fine. But if it's time to move on, it's time to move on. That's fine as well.
Or you tell Gionta, sorry, we're not going to be bringing you back. We've offered PK Subban this deal, and as part of that, he will be wearing the C going forward.
Fine by me.
I think that'd be fine by most Canadiens fans. Do you think he comes back, I guess? We didn't really answer that one.
I don't know. I keep going back and forth on that. Because he seems to legitimately like playing here. It seems to be a decent fit.
Yeah.
You know, it's relatively rare, except for Marty St. Louis, it's relatively rare that captains leave their team. At the same time, I could see another team making a bit of a run at him. Because I think there is still some value there. I could see him going to Pittsburgh or Philly or New Jersey or somewhere else.
That's a coin flip. And it may down to what happens in terms of everybody else. I think Gio's pretty low, despite the fact that he's the captain. He's pretty low on Bergevin's priorities list in terms of what he wants to check off in this offseason and have in line. I think Gio kind of falls into the shuffle of that.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the Subban thing, you've got the Markov thing, you've got the Vanek thing, you've got the glut at center, you've got you know, all the things we just mentioned, finding a replacement for Vanek probably. Gionta is, like you said, he's the captain, but he's lower on the pecking list than all those things.
Question 11. Did Max Pacioretty have a good enough playoffs?
It would have been fun if he pulled a Camilleri and scored 18 goals in 17 games, but by and large, I thought he was good.
I don't think we could complain about Pacioretty's performance.
He's always a guy who's been streaky, and there were cold streaks, but at the same time, like, he was getting his shots off.
He scored some big goals.
He scored some goals. He was getting his chances. He was getting his shots off. His numbers were good, his possession numbers. Like, it wasn't as if, you know, it wasn't as if he was a non-factor. I think by and large, you could even make, you know, he was one of our best forwards. He was Pacioretty. Like I said, it would have been nice to have those high goal totals, because he's a guy who, if he gets going, he's going to be a Conn Smythe candidate, and we didn't quite see that. But by and large, I'm fine with the way he played.
The difference, though, between the Canadiens and the LA Kings is something like Gabrick scoring 11 goals through the playoffs versus what Pacioretty had 3 in the end?
Yeah, I think so.
You know, that's the difference when you boil things down. Now, did they get help from Rene Bork? Yeah, but you're going to need help from the depth, and you're going to need help from your top goal scorers if you're probably going to have any chance of winning the cup. And so, yes, he had a good enough playoffs. He didn't have a great, fantastic playoffs. Still time for that to come. And it wasn't one of those things where I was like, geez, I don't know if Pacioretty is a playoff performer. He looked good. It wasn't like he didn't completely vanish. He had some big goals, especially at the end of that Boston series. I think he definitely had a good enough playoffs. And we hope he's got some great ones in him coming ahead.
He does, just by the very nature of the type of player that he is.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a consistent 30 to 35 goal scorer who goes on insane hot streaks. And there's going to come a point in time where that hot streak coincides with a 20-stretch game in the playoffs where he's going to have 14 goals.
I mean, it was a little while ago, and it didn't seem that vital, but he did score the series winner against Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And he had some big goals, at least one big goal against Boston, if I remember correctly. Whew. So yeah, weird to come out of this fog now.
Yeah, it really is. Like I said, that there's almost no doubt in my mind that at some point Pacioretty's going to have a fantastic playoff run. Assuming this is a team that's going to make the playoffs, you know, basically every season going forward and go on a couple runs. And I think those are fair assumptions. Like, Pacioretty's going to have that 12, 13, 14 goal playoff run.
We've really come a long way. And we might as well just jump to the next one here. Question 12 is the final grade you'd give the 2013-2014 Montreal Canadiens. Before I give the grade, I want to say we've really come a long way, and we started to address this the last couple weeks in the fact that we're no longer shy, and you no longer feel like you're jumping the gun to be talking about the Habs as possible Stanley Cup contenders in the next two seasons. I mean, we've moved through that evolution at this point.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a fluke. The pieces are in place, and Listen, the East wasn't great this year. It's not going to be a whole lot better next year or the year after that.
If there's one team that might be much better in the East next year, it'd be the Canadiens, if you're putting your money out there right now.
Yeah. I mean, Pittsburgh's still going to be a force to be reckoned with, but that's a flawed team. Boston, if anything, I think is slightly on the decline.
Maybe. They're good.
They're very good. But, Boston, Pittsburgh, New York, Montreal, and I'd throw Philly in there. Those are, I think, going to be sort of the teams to focus on in the East for the next two seasons.
I would agree with that. Final grade.
Maybe Tampa. Maybe you throw Tampa in there, but
see what happens there. So the final grade, I'm going to go A. Yeah. Not quite an A+, which is ridiculous because, if you grade against expectations, then it can be nothing but an A+. But if we grade against just how I feel when all said and done, A. Mostly because of the Price injury, and we didn't quite get to the Cup Final. If we got to the Cup Final and lost to the Kings or Blackhawks, even in a sweep, I think I'd give it an A+. A little bit short of what seemed like this team's ceiling in the end, but an A. What are we going to complain about? Thomas Vanek joined the team. Price and Subban both went out and got a gold medal. Had huge coming out parties throughout the year for these guys. Most everything that Bergevin did seemed to turn out right. The coaching staff made the right moves when it really mattered. I got to give him an A.
5 goals, 6 assists, by the way, for Patch Reddy in the playoffs.
That's not so bad.
11 points in 17 games. That's not bad.
That's not so bad.
At all. I'm going A as well. If we're going to do the obnoxious Habs thing where anything short of a Stanley Cup does not deserve an A+, then I'm going with an A. It was a pretty damn good season. A great playoff run, gold medals for Price and Subban, and then a bunch of other just fun moments sprinkled in, the comeback against Ottawa.
Yeah, great.
Price's crazy-ass 43-save game against Ottawa.
Beating the Boston Bruins.
Beating the Boston Bruins.
I mean, that was our gold medal.
Gianta scoring the penalty shot winner in the season finale. It was a fun season.
It was a great season.
As much as, there were down points as well, and there were things to complain about, but by and large, it was a very fun season. And it'll be a season that, I think will be remembered as the season that the Habs kind of entrenched themselves into this session as one of the contenders in the East.
When you think about the fact that we're just two seasons removed, not even two full seasons, two seasons removed from last place in the East and the Gauthier dark era, it's pretty amazing the resurgence that's happened here.
Yeah, it really is. And we always, like we've said this a million times, we always knew that was a possibility, but the future's bright for a lot of teams in the NHL. Actually, getting to that point is a bit of a different matter.
I feel very vindicated, in a way, for the things that we've said on this podcast that I think maybe not even our listeners necessarily, but some critics out there would have been able to say, you guys are a little bit too optimistic about the Canadiens, and you see a little bit too much potential in what they're doing. I feel vindicated for the kind of things that we talked about through the regular season, where we compared the Canadiens to one of those sneak teams that could get past Pittsburgh or Boston along with the New York Rangers. I mean, that's obviously exactly what happened. I remember there were points listening to radio here in Toronto when the Habs and Leafs were very close in the playoffs, and Leafs mind saying things like, hard to say which team's better between the Leafs and Canadiens. And at the time, even though, maybe only 4 points separated the two, this was before the decline of the Leafs. I remember thinking, no, it's not. The Canadiens are a better team. I don't know what you people are talking about. I feel very vindicated by all that. Now, I think the Canadiens proved that they are who we thought they were, and in a very positive way. Silence the crowd. Thank you, Sean. Thanks for
I thought you dropped the mic and walked off.
I should have, eh?
Yeah.
End of podcast. So, since we are kind of doing a little future talk here, your big summer prognostication. And it can't be the Subban signing.
Two things. I think, like we said, Subban's going to get signed for the max, essentially. I have a weird... I think Vanek's gone.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And I think his replacement is a guy who plays for the team who just beat us.
Really?
Brad Richards is coming to Montreal.
I still
think he's getting bought. I don't think you can keep that contract on the books. And if he is a free agent, he really talks like a guy who wants to come play for the Habs. Maybe I'm reading too much into just, pregame interview fluffing up the opposing team's crowd, but he really talked like a guy who really enjoyed playing in Montreal. And it's I mean, he's another center, so that's not really a great fit, but yeah. If he's willing to move over to the wing, I kind of think that's going to happen.
You could definitely move him over to the wing, too.
Yeah, I mean, he is a good playmaker, but...
He is another center, though.
He is another center. That's sort of the fly in the ointment, but it would kind of, you know, if Vanek's gone and you've got some cap space, not that Brad Richards is Thomas Vanek, but
no.
If, you know, if you've got some cap space, you need to bring in another, you know, guy who can put the puck in the net and create some points. He's a veteran who might be looking for, you know, one less contract and one less crack at a ring. I do think it'd be a free agent because I really don't think New York can bring him back. I kind of think there's a fit there.
All right. I like that.
Unless Mike Camilleri makes his triumphant return.
That would be a good fit at this point, a really good
fit.
It
really would.
Kind of the ideal player.
Yeah, it really, really would.
The only thing that I think probably makes people balk at it is the fact that he's played here before, and for some reason there's a weirdness about going back to where you've come from, but well, he's done it once. Exactly. Doesn't stop anybody.
Yeah.
He'd be the perfect guy, and I think at the right value compared to those other names that are out there, like Molson and Gabrick, etc. I'd want Cammy the most.
Yeah, I'm looking at Richard's contract, by the way, on CapGeek. He's still got 6 years left at 24, 25, 27 million.
They'll buy that out. They can afford to now. They've played enough extra home games to buy that out.
And yeah, they have to. As good as he's been, you can't have him on the books till 2020.
Nope. I would definitely buy him out. Yeah, I like that addition. I think that would be good for the Canadians. I think that's good in every way, other than it kind of messes up that center thing. But maybe you've got him in there. Maybe you think about moving Plekanec or something like that at that point and getting good value back. I mean, if you bring Brad Richards in and then you trade Plekanec and you can get in return one of those guys that you were talking about, that makes the team better, I think. Barely better. And possibly maybe opens up some more weakness, but I think it makes them better in other ways. I'd be very scared. I would be very scared of dealing Plekanec as I say that, though.
I know.
Every time I think about it,
it seems like the
risky
type of trade that's going to come back and haunt you.
It really does. I like that prog. That's a bold one on your part.
Yeah.
I'm also prognosticating that Thomas Vanek is gone, but I see his replacement as the guy who he'll replace. He's going to go into Minnesota, go in for Matt Molson, and Matt Molson's going to join the Montreal Canadiens.
I'm happy you said Matt Molson and not Danny Heatley.
Oh, God, no. We're not bringing in Danny All-Star Heatley. No, come on. Is he still in the NHL?
Barely, but yes.
What happened to that guy?
Has there ever been an elite player who's fallen, like, a relatively young elite player who's fallen off like he has?
Was it buying into himself too much? Did he quit trying? I mean, he seems like an asshole.
There is that.
I don't know.
I don't know what happened, but, I mean, for a guy who was one of the five best goal scorers on the planet for about a five-year stretch.
You know, if Gio leaves, I'd like to bring in one Saku Koivu.
Yeah, also a center. But
he can play wing now, right?
Yeah, he can.
I'm forcing everyone over to the wing. I'm just apparently signing... No, Matt Molson is who I see joining the Canadiens next year.
I like that. I think he's going back to the Islanders.
Really?
Yeah.
Made sense. Although nothing they do makes sense, so... Other than signing Halak, which made a lot of sense. They've got to replace Vanek, and it's not going to be easy.
It's not going to be easy, but yeah, like we said, this team went from being decent to very good when Dominik Vanek joined, and that's not an accident. And you're not going to replace him if you lose him, but if you don't at least find a guy who's 75% the player he is, then you go back to being a team that's lacking a bit of depth in the top nine.
What if we brought in Nazem Kadri?
Oh, God, I would move heaven and earth to get Nazem Kadri.
It won't cost you heaven and earth, my friend.
It should.
I know it should, but they hate him here.
I know. It's the weird... It's such a typical Canadian market thing where... I mean, he hasn't even really underperformed, dude.
Like, he had a good season.
He's been good.
Yeah, I know.
For the life of me, I don't understand the blowback that this guy's getting, but...
He's had some...
We talked about it before. It's, you know, Montreal and Toronto don't get nice things very often, and this is kind of the reason.
Okay, so... Toronto's changed nothing, right, after the horrible season that they have. They've added Brendan Shanahan as one more brain in there, but all the old brains are still around. The idea is they want to, at some point, get rid of Dion Phaneuf, it seems. Even if they don't strip him of his captaincy now, they've essentially stripped him of his captaincy. They've embarrassed that. They've messed that up entirely. Kadri seems to be on the outs because they've said the whole reason they bringing back the coach there is to put some of the onus on the players. And so they're also going to look to kind of rotate a decent percentage of that roster. I think Nazem Kadri, based on what I'm hearing from everyone in Toronto, is definitely on the outs. And I think you're not going to have to pay too much to get him. I could even, just knowing what I'm always seeing from this Toronto thing, I think you could probably talk them into Rene Bork and a second rounder for Nazem Kadri.
Are they really going to trade him in their division?
That's the one thing that you might not get to do. They might not send him to the... I feel like they'd probably want to send him out west.
I would think so, too. Because it's going to come back to haunt you, because he's a very good player who's been pretty damn good in throughout his NHL career. I don't understand the Kadri thing. I never will.
Like, in one season, his shooting percentage was insane. And we were all saying, well, Kadri's good, but he's not this good. And Toronto fans were like, oh my God, you're an idiot. He's the best. He's going to lead us to everything. Next season, his shooting percentage comes back down to earth, has a very good season, and everyone suddenly in Toronto has turned on Kadri for not hearing what we were saying the year before, saying he's a good player, he's not this good. So the fact that he wasn't the superstar we told them he wasn't, but instead is just a solid player, they immediately made him into the enemy. It's amazing, and he's going to go somewhere cheap. I wish it was Montreal. Grew up a Habs fan.
Did he?
Yeah, big time Habs fan. A lot of first and second gen or second gen kids grow up Habs fans. It's a good thing to have. So that's our prognosticating, all about the forwards. Do you have a final douche of the week?
Like I said, I'm in a pretty good mood. I guess I'll give it to John Moore.
Yeah.
You know what? Two part. I'll give it to John Moore for the hit because that was a bad hit.
Yeah.
And I'm also going to give it to the Canadiens training staff for letting Weiss back out there.
Oh, that's fair. That was ridiculous.
That was unbelievable. I mean, it's one of those things where, A, the moment he gets up off the ice, you know
he's Subban impressed. Had to catch him.
Yeah, and then I'm all for the gladiator part of hockey. I love it when it's basically anything below the neck, but we got to start being smart about these head injury things. Yep. And the moment you saw him back on the bench, that was just cringe-inducing.
That was horrible. No,
blew my mind. I couldn't believe he was back out there.
You can't do that. And the NHL did a good job for a couple seasons. This season, it seemed like 9 times out of 10, players were coming back, obviously conkied.
Yeah.
They got to get a... There's going to be hell to pay for this in lawsuits. And the fact that they'll be able to point to the fact that despite all this knowledge we now have, guys are still going back out there with concussions, that's not going to help your case, NHL. Got to get your shit together. Good douche. I like that one a lot. I'm going to give it to the golf course trolls. I don't mind getting into it with Rangers fans. I don't mind eating it from Rangers fans and anybody else still alive. But Boston Bruins fans, sorry, we beat you. And especially Toronto Maple. I barely remembered you people existed until you decided to troll after we lost Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Final without Carey Price. So, you know, congratulations on feeling good about that. It's been 2 months since you played hockey. Glad to know you're still watching it. But nothing annoys me worse than the peanut gallery trying to troll you.
That is fair.
We've earned the right to not hear anything you say at this point. Not to say I wasn't, although it was barely golf course when I completely enjoyed the Leafs loss last year. Same round. Counts, same round. And I was also happy about the Bruins losing, but I didn't troll either. I definitely trolled, though, when the Leafs lost. That was fun.
I'm still trolling them about that.
That's the beauty of the Leafs. You control them forever about the things they do because they never do anything to say, yeah, but we did this because you did it.
If winning the Cup feels half as good as watching the Leafs blow a 4-1 third period lead did, I'm going to enjoy that day.
Winning the Cup must feel pretty good because I can't imagine feeling much better than I did after the Habs beat the Bruins in Game 7.
Yeah.
Hard to imagine feeling better than that. That was fantastic. Really the highlight of the season, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That was amazing. And that was mission accomplished at that point. It was all gravy after. We got a couple more wins. We found out what Tkachuk was. The future's bright, but really this season, what we'll remember is beating the Boston Bruins in those 7 games. Sending them home, and if you're still feeling a little bit bad about what happened in the Eastern Conference Final, Habs fans, take a moment, sit back, and think to yourself, you know who's not playing for the Stanley Cup right now? And that's thanks to the Montreal Canadiens. it's the Boston Bruins. They have zero chance of adding another Stanley Cup, at least as far as this season is concerned. You send another season into the later years of Zdeno Chara, it's going to get harder and harder for them to win the Cup. It was definitely a big step towards stopping them from getting another one. They're not still playing, and I truly believe that if Montreal hadn't stopped them, they would be playing either the Kings or the Hawks for a chance at the Stanley Cup. So I'm going to hang my hat on that as a success of the season.
Yeah, the what if thing hurts. It really does.
Oh, it does.
And you know, you only get so many cracks at it. That being said, it's hard to look at this team and not see how, you know, I mean, the window's open for a couple more years at the very least.
The window just opened for the first time.
You know, this is the year the window opened, and it sucks to see Price out like that, but it's not closing.
No. Not close. In fact, it's going to open wider. With Tenorti, yeah, with should. Bolia, with Galchenyuk, with Gallagher. Yeah, maybe it doesn't. Maybe it doesn't play out like it should. I'm not saying this is a guarantee, but the pieces are in place for the window to continue opening wider. And generally when you see a team, this kind of youth, have this kind of run and start building something, they're building something for real. I truly believe that. I still think the next coach is the one who gets this team the cup.
Patrick Roy?
Terrier could last a while now.
So changed my mind on him.
Terrier could
fully
really last.
On board now.
Yeah, I know. We've come right around on that. Was there a highlight of your week? Despite the loss?
I mean, seven goals is pretty fun.
Yeah, I think can't complain.
Oh, I'll go with that.
Game.
I mean, it's hard to think of a, you know, it was a fun run. It was still a week where we got eliminated. Our season ended. But hey, seven goal game, sure.
I'm going to give it to Rene Bork's game winner in game five, the one that put the Habs up 5-4 at that point, because it looked for a moment like a 4-1 lead in a elimination game was about to get away from us. We all forget because of what happened in the third, and it went wild again. But there was a moment where it was 4-4 after a 4-1 game. Bork came back, and essentially the first shot he threw at Talbot wound up behind him. So that worked out for us and led to that 7-4 win. And that kind of made everyone go, okay, phew, it's not necessary. We're going to have to play hard the rest of the way, but it's not necessarily the meltdown that we thought we were looking at. And really, I think, led us off a little bit. A 4-2 loss without Carey Price feels better than a 4-1 series loss. It just does. There's a big difference between the two in my mind.
Yeah, it really does. And a 1-0 loss in Game 6, and if they just could have gotten one by him, then it would have been, you know, Game 7 at the Bell Center tonight. Maybe with Carey Price playing.
They were so close. The Galchenyuk goal that didn't happen in the impossible Lundqvist save against Vanek in Game 6. And you could say the same for the Bruins in the last series, and rightfully so. I mean, there's always these little moments that get away from you, and those end up being the difference. But it wasn't an absolutely dominant performance by the Rangers. It wasn't like the Habs without Carey Price curled up and then went home. They played... New York played a perfect game in Game 6. Perfect game. I don't think I've seen many defensive efforts better watching playoff hockey before. And maybe you could say Montreal wasn't doing what they needed to, but I really want to give the credit to the Rangers in that game. I think they were fantastic in Game 6. I like the fact that they won 2. They could have easily won 3 in that series. It was very close. Next season.